to treatment and keep people out of jails who actually really need help. And I think if your callers are interested in learning more about how to support people who use drugs and getting them access to the services that they need and making sure not to fill up our jails and our prisons with people who use drugs who could probably benefit from being part of the community, I'd recommend them look into it. And they can get more information at yesonip44.org. We still need 8,000 more signatures to be able to make it to the November ballot, and we'd really appreciate the support of Oregonians on this.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Vicaria, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
We have been speaking with Dr. Sheila Vicaria, the Deputy Director of the Department of Research and Academic Engagement at the Drug Policy Alliance. More information on Initiative Proposal 44 is available online at yesonip44.org. More information on the Drug Policy Alliance is available at drugpolicy.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO this Friday, May 1st at 11 a.m. for KBOO's first online live webinar and Q&A. The subject is COVID-19 in Palestine and Israel. We will hear from guest speakers like Dr. Osama Tenos, a pediatrician specialist based in Haifa, Richard Silverstein of the Jewish Bloc Tikkun Olam, and Dr. Yasser Abu Jahameh, the Director General for Gaza Community Mental Health Program. Our speakers will discuss the conditions for Palestinians inside the West Bank and Israel, as well as highlight the broader implication for any nation and any minority group in the world fighting against the virus. For more information and registration for this event, go to kboo.fm/KBOO webinar. You must register online. For any questions, please email Public Affairs Director Tammy Apteis at publicaffairs@kboo.org. Again, that's COVID-19 in Palestine and Israel KBOO webinar, Friday, May 1st at 11 a.m.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. This is Jamie Partridge, your co-host for this evening. Amanda Hill is not with us this evening, and we have a special broadcast, which comes from the Labor Notes Conference. Every 2 years, Labor Notes Conference in Chicago, although this year it was not in Chicago, it was virtual. And we'll hear from several speakers that were on the plenary of that conference last weekend. Beginning with Al Bradbury, who is the director of Labor Notes.
Welcome to the first ever virtual Labor Notes conference. My name is Alexandra Bradbury. I'm the editor and co-director of Labor Notes, the voice of rank and file activists who want to put the movement back in the labor movement. Whether you're part of a union or a worker center or organizing under your own steam, if you are doing your part to build a fighting labor movement that is led from the bottom up, Labor Notes is your home base. We publish a magazine and website, labornotes.org, where you can read our current coverage and how workers are fighting back. And if you have your own story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. We're also a training resource and an organizing network. We put on big events like this one, and our local troublemaker schools, smaller events throughout the year, which not only teach organizing skills, but also make connections so that workplace activists can get to know each other within the same union and across unions, within the same industry and across industries, within the same city and across the world, so we can learn from each other and inspire each other, back each other up, lend each other solidarity, and build a movement together for a better world. A few months ago, no one could have predicted how different today would be from the conference that we had spent the past year planning. This is a scary and disorienting time. Already, we have lost people to the virus, including loved ones and coworkers and union siblings of some of you who are participating on this call today, and including some wonderful workplace activists and shop stewards who had planned to be with us at this year's Labor Notes conference. But during this hard time, the place where I am finding hope is in the courage and clarity of so many workers who are organizing together to defend themselves and their communities and to transform the conditions that have made this event so disastrous, to fix what's broken so that we never allow such a thing to happen again. You're going to hear from some of those people today. I'm so honored, Labor Notes is so honored to have this group of people assembled. So as we get underway, I'd like to set the scene for you. In an alternate reality, we are all together in Chicago. You just picked up your badge and your registration packet and maybe an overpriced sandwich, and you made your way into this huge ballroom that's packed with people. Everywhere you look, there are Teamsters, teachers, nurses, Amazon workers, grocery workers, transit workers, postal workers, farm workers, university workers, hotel workers, Uber drivers, and so many more. 4,000 people from all over the world, lots of brightly colored union t-shirts. And all around you can hear people laughing and greeting friends and introducing themselves and speaking many different languages. You find your way to a seat and leaf through your program book, browsing the hundreds of workshops. Sitting on one side of you is an auto worker who traveled here from Mexico. Sitting on the other side of you is a casino worker from Cambodia. And the whole row in front of you is a group of chicken plant workers from Arkansas. And up on the podium, you can see today's speakers for the opening plenary. Stacy Davis Gates from the Chicago Teachers. Kelly Cabrera Adler from the New York State Nurses. Gia Lee from the Movement of Rank and File Educators. Carl Rosen from the United Electrical Workers, and Jamie Partridge from Communities and Postal Workers United. Someone gets up and taps the mic and says, "Welcome, all you troublemakers. Welcome to the 2020 Labor Notes Conference." And you're up on your feet clapping as the room erupts in cheers and applause. And you can hear each other because you're not all on mute on a Zoom conference call. This plenary session and the other workshops today will all be recorded, and the videos will be posted on our website, labornotes.org, next week, in case you want to share them with others who couldn't make it today. So let's get to it. Moderating our plenary session is the fantastic Stacy Davis Gates, Vice President of the Chicago Teachers Union. You saw her speaking truth to power during the union's two-week strike last fall, and she and the rest of the Chicago teachers haven't let up during this crisis. Please welcome Stacy Davis Gates.
It would help if I unmuted myself. Hey, thank you all for joining us today. I want to honor those workers who have given their lives, who are essential, who have been on the front lines, who we've lost. And I just want to take a moment to honor their sacrifice, their work, and their memory. So if we could all just mute ourselves for a moment. Thank you. So to it. Today, we are going to have a fantastic panel. Workers in the movement who are leading fights in their different industries. We know beyond this moment is our desire to not return to normal. Normal is a place that de-emphasizes workers, that de-emphasizes workers of color, women workers, frontline workers. It is a space that believes in austerity, believes in gratifying the wishes of billionaires and wealthy corporations and leaving us behind. COVID-19 has put a light on the necessity of strong labor unions that can both protect, support, but also expand the vision of radical imagination. We are here today because we seek a leadership, we seek a working class that can lead in this moment, and the necessity of that leadership, safety, health and safety, making sure that the recovery that we must experience in our cities, in our states, and in this country is focused on the many. And so without any delay, I want to make sure that we begin this with the focus on how we absorb the moment, how we pivot from the pain, pivot from mourning into action. Now I'm going to move our education sector. Gia, can you offer us some words in this moment? Thank you.
Thanks, Stacey. And yeah, if anything positive has come out from this, I'd say positive is the level of awareness in our ability to be in solidarity with each other, that we're not isolated in this work, in this struggle. And my name is Gia Lee. I'm a New York City public school teacher in New York City, a member of the Movement of Rank and File Educators, which is a caucus within the United Federation of Teachers, the largest teachers union in the nation. And I just want to provide a little bit of context to our conditions here prior to the pandemic. We're in New York City is under mayoral control. And what that means is a system of 1.1 million students and 1,700 schools across five boroughs has centralized power over our schools. So the mayor is able to basically put into place a chancellor who does the bidding of the mayor and other interests we don't know of. We don't have elected school boards any longer. This was an austerity measure that was imposed during, you know, during ed reform at the beginning phases of it here. We also, at the state level, were facing something called the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, which is a lawsuit filed by parents in Harlem over 10 years ago because the state was not funding public schools equitably and it disproportionately towards Black and Brown communities. It's, you know, death by a million cuts. We can say a death by a billion cuts here because we're in a predominantly Democratic state, but we say Democratic while they're very fiscally conservative. And let's just put into context, we hold some of the, we have a huge number of billionaires. There are 112 billionaires who hold about $525 billion in wealth in New York State alone. We're the most diverse and or there's the most income disparity according to the campaign or the Fiscal Policy Institute. So this is prior to the pandemic, and right when the pandemic started, you can imagine still we have a continuation of people with centralized power dictating decisions about how we were going to take care of our families and our communities within our public school system. And I want to give you a little bit of a timeline. We started to hear in our rank and file kind of informal networks that several schools across the city reported positive cases either by family members or teachers, actual people who worked in the schools. It was reported as per policy, New York State and New York City policy report to officials who would then were supposed to close the schools for 24 hours. That did not happen. It's just coming out in the news now. There's investigations within the Department of Education of putting, basically telling schools that they need to be quiet about this, to not inform families, to not inform other staff members, because they didn't want to create panic. I think we're seeing the big the consequences to that now because of the number of cases. We're ground zero basically now for the number of unprecedented cases. We have more cases here than in many countries, just in New York City alone. Death tolls of not just, you know, of educators, reportedly just over 50 people within the New York City public school system, staff have passed away because of the because of COVID-19, and several people I know of personally, I work with colleagues in other places, have also tested positive, and that could have all been prevented. So when we started to hear this, we started to reach out to our union leadership saying we need to push the city to shut the schools down immediately. This was in the first couple weeks of March. By March 9th, nothing was happening. Our union leadership basically was, you know, was quoted as saying, we in the city government are going to agree to disagree about the closure of the schools. We said that wasn't good enough. So by that Saturday, there our caucus organized a citywide call-in just like this. I think over 600 people tried to register. There's a max number of people who can actually could actually get on for however the system was working at the time. Unprecedented numbers of rank and file members were saying the union leadership wasn't doing enough, the city government was not listening, and we were staging a sick out. And by Sunday, Sunday evening, we heard that the mayor was going to close the schools for the week ahead. Monday, no one was supposed to show up, but then the mayor said, but Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, all staff needed to show up to schools to report, exercise social distancing somehow, but get training through the days. I can tell you right now, nothing was prepared by the Department of Education in terms of any kinds of training. People went to school, exercise social distancing in some places, and I just described there are over 1,700 schools in New York City. So there's all kinds of misinformation. Some administrators were telling their staff to meet in the library or meet in a centralized place. And meanwhile, there is nothing prepared. And we're seeing the consequences of that. People were in infected buildings. I think if it weren't for our organizing of a ground up, you know, life or death situation, sick out, people were not, you know, nothing was going to happen. I think we really put the pressure on the city government. And then as a result, a lot of folks, we saw a 20% uptick in membership in our caucus. We're small, we're informal, and people wanted to get activated. So we formed committees, working conditions committees, regional committees across the five boroughs. And as a result, we were able to ally with other organizations, parent organizations in our city to you know, basically call for demands around our remote learning plans. Everything, again, was top down without any input from educators, from the families, about how things were working. So these demands became like a huge coalition building exercise for us. With parent allies, and it's been incredible in terms of the level of community support and listening to each other when there's zero listening happening from the top. We also organized when they decided to cancel our spring break and even cancel Good Friday, which is a religious holiday. People were furious about it. That was another opportunity for us to organize with families around a set of demands for a slowdown. So we organized slowdowns, and it was hugely successful in many places. The Department of Education saw what was coming from ground up and therefore said, you can have optional activities to present your students. You don't have to hold video conferencing and whatever else was coming down the pike. So where we're at right now is, like similar to what the nurses are facing, many teachers took days off prior around that March 9th week, and it had to come out of their own reserve of sick days. And so we're striking a set of demands. Our union shut down our grievance portal. So they basically shut down any process for us to have grievances. We organized collective grievances anyway. We're seeing unprecedented number of members who are organizing around this. We even have administrators supporting us in this collective effort and forcing the union to acknowledge these grievances. So that's where we're at right now. We're facing huge budget cuts. April 2nd, our state government decided to go ahead, and the governor basically bullied his way with a cut, budget cuts to public education and to healthcare. So now we're organizing not just within our ranks, but across the state with other locals, not just like their union leadership, but with the rank and filers. It's really exciting. I'm excited for the work that we're in the midst of right now. Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO Portland, Labor Radio. You've been listening to the Labor Notes Conference in, well, not Chicago, a virtual Labor Notes conference last weekend.
Thank you, Gia. Gia and Kelly both provide us with some insight into how many states and municipalities will see this as an opportunity to continue to exert austerity, to continue along the lines of neoliberal policies that are both racist and sexist, that will choke the public sector in a time where we are seeing demonstrated the need for a more robust, a stronger, a well-funded public sector. Listen, COVID has destroyed communities that exist without safety nets. We see this. We can look no further than Detroit to even understand how the transit system is still being used by workers, by workers in a city that is 80% Black, that is a hot spot right now with respect to COVID-19. The public sector is necessary not only for folks to have clean streets and to get around the cities, but it is necessary for the health of communities of color. And we are seeing that very clearly, which I think is a great segue to Jamie. Jamie is going to bring us a message from the U.S. Postal System, a space that has been marginalized over time, one that Trump is zeroing in on very clearly and sharply. Jamie, can you add to this discussion, please?
Thank you, Stacey, and Kelly and Gia. Let me start by saying that 8 years ago, Labor Notes helped pull together, this is in 2012, Communities and Postal Workers United, a group of rank and file activists from the four postal unions, to fight cuts, closures, delay of mail, and the ever-present privatization agenda. And this year, in mid-March, as the COVID pandemic was hitting all of us, Labor Notes again played a key role in pulling together postal worker organizers from around the country, some in Communities and Postal Workers United, and others from the vast Labor Notes network. Alex Fields, a rural letter carrier in Knoxville, Tennessee, in conversation with coworkers, launched an online petition for personal protective equipment, hazard pay, emergency leave. The petition got 50,000 signatures within 24 hours, 31,000 postal workers. So Alex reached out to Al Bradbury and the Labor Notes, and she helped bring in others like myself, and we launched a postal worker Facebook group, which immediately gained 8,000, now nearly 20,000 postal workers, and we held a series of Zoom calls organized by Labor Notes, about 100, 200 on each call. And while the Facebook page's purpose is to discuss organizing for safety and workers' rights, much of the posting is postal workers sharing their fear and desperation being on the front lines of mourning the mounting deaths among postal workers, primarily almost exclusively Black and brown postal workers. But lots of motivational and, you know, humorous, uplifting posts as well. At this point, we have 30 known postal worker deaths and about 2,000 positive infections confirmed. About 8,000 people are in quarantine. The epicenter, of course, is New York City. We know of one situation where letter carriers refused to go to work when they heard that there was a positive infection in their facility. Many plants and offices are at 50% or 75% out, called out after COVID confirmations, especially when management does not deep clean the facility. Mail is not being delivered in some New York City neighborhoods. I just saw an article today, people not getting mail for a week. In Michigan, mail is being delivered alternate days. So in this situation, we're making frequent use of polls on our Facebook page to determine the key problems that are widely and deeply felt by postal workers. And the issue that has risen to the top recently is the fact that the authorities, management, postal nurses, CDC, the health authorities, they hide and delay information about who is sick and who should quarantine. So we'd advise an emergency plan based on labor notes, secrets of a successful organizer, principles for postal workers who are not accustomed to organizing. Our unions, our national unions, are primarily servicing and business unions by and large. So we put together this emergency plan for organizing your facility for safety in the versus COVID-19. And it basically goes like this. You talk to everyone because everyone can get infected and everyone can be exposed. You must find an organizer in each department, workstation, aisle, shift, ideally one organizer for every 10 workers. That's your organizing committee. And then each organizer has organizing conversations with each one of the workers that they're responsible for. And that consists of agitating, explaining, and asking. So you agitate, this pandemic is life and death. It's not for you, for your coworker, for your family, for their family, for our customers. Explain a plan. Everybody gets on a text message group, WhatsApp or whatever works for your department, for the organizing committee. Everyone agrees to report if they have symptoms. Everyone agrees to investigate who is in close contact with the infected coworker. Everyone who is in close contact agrees to immediately self-quarantine for 14 days and insist that management deep clean the facility. Don't wait. Work out the paperwork later. Don't wait for testing, doctor's orders, CDC, local health authorities, the postal nurse, leave, type of leave, notifying management. Act now, rely on yourselves. Okay, ask. Agitate, explain, ask. Are you in? Will you be part of this text network? You know, and get from each person their name, their work site, their shift, and their telephone number for the text network. That's the plan. And the follow-up, of course, is when a coworker gets symptoms, did they report to all? Did the contact self-quarantine? Did management deep clean? Did management retaliate? You know, who needs to talk to whom to strengthen the solidarity? And then the question also out there is, do we need to organize to refuse to work in dangerous conditions if management doesn't deep disinfect? And then, of course, keep the network together for the next struggle. That's the positive outcome. And we know that this emergency plan is being used in some work sites and in other essential industry workplaces. Labor Notes put it on the website, which was great. Let me just finish up by saying that in the past 2 weeks, after another poll on Facebook, we've pivoted to pushing our national unions to take up the hazard pay emergency leave for all affected by the virus and funding for the Postal Service. Funding because letter volume has dropped like 30% in the last month. It'll be down 50% by summer. The Postmaster General says that Postal Service will be out of money by fall. So we organized a letter signed by 200 union representatives, 15 local presidents, calling on our union leaders to mobilize our members in this fight, similar to what the nurses are doing. You know, currently we're being told to write Congress. Not enough. The Trump administration will undoubtedly take this opportunity to push its privatization agenda. Stay tuned to engage with us in that fight. Mourn the dead, fight like hell for the living.
Thank you, Jamie. One of the things that Jamie makes very clear to us is the necessity of having a well-organized rank and file. This is not a movement that will be led solely by leadership. The union is all of us. And if the union is all of us, we have to activate appropriately. We have to create spaces via Zoom, via Google, via conference call, to make sure that our membership understands the stakes. In many of our industries right now, the support, the protection, the foresight, the courage of unions is a life and death situation. And we have to take it very seriously, and we have to have a very sharp, clear set of demands, not only for this moment, but how we reimagine going back into some of our workspaces.
And that wraps it up for this evening's Labor Radio. Let me remind all our listeners that KBOO.FM is where you can go to make a contribution to this community radio station, which is volunteer-run and listener-supported. We didn't have our spring membership drive this year, so if you're not yet a member or if it's time to renew, KBOO.FM. And that's it for tonight, every Monday night at 6 p.m. And stay tuned to Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.